This episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hears from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Canva. We're all looking for ways to make an impact at work, but not all of us are skilled in visual design. Canva helps you get your point across, simply and beautifully. It's easy to design Canva presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos. You start with a designer-made template and customize it with your content. Plus, add graphics, charts, and more from Canva's massive media library. Whatever department you work in, Canva is perfect for any task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to Brainstuff, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, Brainstuff, Lauren Vogelbaum here. In Japan, the annual spring explosion of blushing pink cherry blossoms has been celebrated for over 1,000 years. And now there are cherry blossom festivals around the world, in Sweden, Canada, Spain, and Washington, D.C., just to name a few. Every spring, some 1.5 million tourists visit D.C. to witness the fleeting flowering of more than 3,700 cherry blossom trees encircling the Tidal Basin, a reservoir in the middle of the city with West Potomac Park and many monuments around its banks. For the article this episode is based on, HowStuffWorks spoke with John Malott, a former president of the Japan-America Society of Washington, D.C., and a former director of Japanese affairs at the U.S. State Department, who served diplomatic roles in Kobe and Osaka, Japan. He said, "It's very, very picturesque. You have the blue of the water and the blue of the sky. Then you have the whitish pink of the cherry blossoms against the incredible white of the Jefferson Memorial in the distance. It's very beautiful and also very peaceful." The story of how and why thousands of cherry blossom trees were gifted from Japan more than 100 years ago and planted in America's capital city is fascinating. But first, let's learn a little bit more about the cherry blossom tree and its history. Flowering cherry trees are native to a number of places with temperate climates around the world. But in Japan, these have been cultivated and celebrated since around 800 CE, which is when they and their blossoms, called sakura in Japanese, first began to appear in poetry and picture scrolls. They're related to the cherry trees that we humans get fruit from, but whereas cherry fruit trees have been bred for their tasty fruit, cherry blossom trees have been bred as ornamentals, that is, for those beautiful flowers. Most varieties do still grow fruit, but they're small and not delicious. Birds and other non-human animals will eat them, though. Their flowers range in color from white to deep pink, depending on the variety. While they typically only live about 30 to 40 years, with care and good conditions, they can go much longer. More on that later. For more than a millennium, people in Japan have celebrated the arrival of spring with parties called hanami, meaning flower gazing. The idea is to have a picnic of varying complexity out under the blooming trees to enjoy the blossoms while they last. A cherry blossom tree only blooms for about 10 days every year, just as the weather begins to warm up after the cold of winter. So, in Japan, from about mid-March through April, families and groups of friends vie for picnic spots under a canopy of pink blossoms, and companies throw rowdy, sake-fueled parties that run late into the night. Malott said, "They get the lowliest staff member to go out early in the morning and stake out a spot under the trees. The poor guy has to be there all day." Which doesn't actually sound all that unpleasant, but I'm sure it has its low points. The Japanese Meteorological Agency tracks the so-called cherry blossom front as bloom-worthy warmer weather slowly makes its way from southern to northern Japan from March through May each year, and offers predictions for when the peaks will be in different areas so that people can plan their hanami. But okay, so these trees are pretty. But how did sakura become such a thing in Japanese culture? As with any cultural thing, there isn't a single answer, but a number of dovetailing reasons. Their early spring blooming coincides with a season of renewal and new beginnings in Japan. April is the start of the new school year for kids and the start of the new fiscal year for companies. And part of the draw of the blossoms is the knowledge that they'll soon be gone. That blooming window is so short, partially because cherry blossom trees shed their petals while they're still springy and colorful, not once they're faded or wilted. The bright petals can create lovely clouds in the breeze and on bodies of water. This simple fact of botany has become symbolic for the beautiful but ephemeral nature of all life. Malat said, because they fall off the tree and die at the peak of their bloom, whenever you see a cherry blossom in a Japanese movie or TV show, that usually means that someone young has died. If the heroine is in the hospital getting sicker and sicker, and they cut to a shot of a cherry blossom falling to the ground, you know she's gone. It's a symbol that carries a lot of weight. During World War II, the planes flown by Japanese kamikaze pilots were named after another word for cherry blossom, oka. The young cadets who piloted the planes were also called cherry blossoms, and their uniforms and aircraft were stamped with the image of a single pink flower. The Japanese word natsukashi describes a nostalgic feeling of happiness tinged with sadness and is associated with cherry blossom season as a whole. In addition to being a time of renewal, it's a time of endings, too. School graduations, for example, are held in March. Malat reported that they're often accompanied by, and I quote, tearjerker songs about cherry blossoms falling. You can still find wild-flowering cherry trees around the world, but most cherry blossom trees grown are cultivated varieties from Japan, or hybrids grown using trees from Japan. Some, like many in Brazil, were brought over by Japanese immigrants. Others, like many in Australia and the ones in Washington, D.C., were gifts from the Japanese government. On March 28th of 1912, a one-paragraph article appeared in the Washington Post with the underwhelming headline, Mrs. Taft Plants a Tree. The day before, First Lady Nellie Taft, a wife of President William Howard Taft, had planted the first two cherry blossom trees in Washington, D.C. as gifts from the mayor of Tokyo. And that's the story that most people know, that the entire cherry blossom tradition in D.C. started with a Japanese gift in 1912. But that's not the half of it. The real story starts with one Eliza Skidmore, a photographer and writer who was the first woman to sit on the board of the National Geographic Society. Skidmore traveled extensively in Japan and came back to D.C. in 1885, convinced that cherry blossom trees should be planted in Potomac Park. This was a then-new bit of land that had been under the Potomac River until an engineering project to protect the city from flooding was enacted earlier in the 1880s. It changed the banks of the river, created the tidal basin, and left the city with this new stretch of land. Skidmore later wrote, since they had to plant something in that great stretch of raw, reclaimed ground by the riverbank, they might as well plant the most beautiful thing in the world, the Japanese cherry tree. Skidmore campaigned tirelessly for more than 25 years, petitioning every president and D.C. official she could get a hold of to plant cherry blossom trees, but her idea was ignored. Then, one David Fairchild came along. Fairchild worked for the brand new U.S. Department of Agriculture as a plant explorer who traveled the world looking for plant species that could be cultivated in America. While in Japan, he also fell for cherry blossoms. In 1909, Fairchild showed that cherry blossom trees thrived in the temperate climate of the D.C. area, which emboldened Skidmore to write one more letter to the new First Lady, proposing to pay for the trees herself. To her amazement, Nellie Taft replied 2 days later, writing, I've taken the matter up and am promised the trees. That's when a wealthy Japanese chemist by the name of Dr. Jokichi Takamine got involved. He was the first person to isolate adrenaline, by the way. He lived in the U.S. and had campaigned for cherry blossom trees in New York City. Skidmore told him about the First Lady's promise, and Takamine came up with the idea of making D.C.'s cherry blossom trees a gift from Japan. Unfortunately, the first shipment of 2,000 trees was plagued with insects and disease and had to be burned. But 2 months later, on March 26th of 1912, a shipment of 3,020 healthy trees arrived. Mrs. Taft planted the first two the very next day, and Skidmore was there to witness the fruition of a decades-long dream. Now cherry blossom trees line the tidal basin and other parts of the park, as well as other areas of the city. And, incredibly, a few of them have been there this whole time. The two original trees planted by Nellie Taft 112 years ago are still standing, along with a handful of others from that shipment. Many others are related to those first trees, brought to new life through cultivated clippings. The park's arborists keep a database containing the personal health record of each tree. If you go, be aware that the trees are delicate. It's actually illegal to touch them. They're best enjoyed with your other senses, and from a respectful distance. Today's episode is based on the article, The Very Short Symbolic Life of the Cherry Blossom, on HowStuffWorks.com, written by Dave Ruse. A Brainstuff is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with HowStuffWorks.com and is produced by Tyler Klang. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.